Meet the press, ready for this spontaneous, unrehearsed news conference, are four of America's top news reporters. Here's the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
Welcome once again to Meet the Press. Our guest today is Mr. Edley Stevenson, the former governor of Illinois and twice the Democratic nominee for president. In this year's campaign, he has said repeatedly that he is not a candidate and that he does not believe a draft is possible. Nevertheless, his name continues to be prominently mentioned for the nomination. A poll of more than 500 newspaper editors this past week judged him to be the strongest candidate the Democrats could nominate. As the titular head of his party, Governor Stevenson is an influential figure in Democratic policymaking. He is a member of the party's advisory council. Governor Stevenson has long been a student of foreign affairs. He has traveled through all parts of the world, and he recently returned from an extensive tour of Latin America. And now seated around the press table, ready to interview Governor Stevenson, are Richard Wilson of the Coles Publications, John Steele of Time and Life Magazines, Chalmers Roberts of the Washington Post, and Lawrence E. Spivak, our regular member of the Meet the Press panel. Now, Governor Stevenson, if you're ready, we'll start the questions with Mr. Spivak.
Governor Stevenson, I know you've given a great deal of thought to the role that America must play during the next 4 years in the kind of world that we live in. Can you give us some idea of the kind of president you think we need, the qualities and the experience that you think the man should have?
I think that the most important quality in a president is character. There can be little effective persuasion or little conviction among our friends unless they are confident that the president's character, that his words, that his meaning, that his purpose is clear and distinct. I think in addition to that, there are, of course, all the customary qualities of leadership, courage, of familiarity with the basic problems that concern the world, and with objectives of the United States, its purposes, its mission in the world, its what it represents, what it stands for. So I suppose that this is a combination both of character, of education, and of moral purpose.
Now, there are four people besides yourself who are now being considered, who are high on the totem pole for the Democratic nomination. Would you say that they all meet the requirements that you have just
described? Yes, I think they do.
Are they all? You also said at one time that you thought the Democrats particularly must nominate a liberal. Do they all meet Senator Johnson, Senator Symington, Senator Kennedy, and Senator Humphrey? Besides yourself, do they all meet the requirements of liberal
as you consider it? Yes, I think that everyone has his own, everyone's definition of liberal would vary somewhat in detail. Generally speaking, I think all of these gentlemen would fulfill my definition of liberal.
Now, Governor, in your Virginia speech recently,
some would be much more liberal in the sense of going much further in one regard than another. Likewise, that would be compensated perhaps by views that they hold in other respects. It's very difficult, of course, to define with any great precision what we any longer mean by the word liberal.
But all of them would satisfy your definition of liberal. Governor, in your Virginia speech recently, you charged, and these are your words, "Our own leaders have deceived us by underrating the magnitude of the crisis." Now, is your charge that they have willfully deceived us, or just that they were ignorant, their judgment was bad?
Well, I, as to willfulness, if you imply willfulness in any malevolent sense, no. If you imply willfulness as a means of covering up their failures, to obscure them, to put emphasis perhaps where I wouldn't put it, I'd say yes. Surely the methods of public relations have been used, to my way of thinking, excessively. That we've been much more preoccupied with minor concerns than we have with major concerns. That we have frequently issued statements from high places which are misleading. I think those were done intentionally. Perhaps not to mislead, but they reflected a point of view which may have been generated by philosophy entirely different from mine. But they were misleading, in my judgment. When the Secretary of State said a couple of years ago that the Soviet, that communism was manifestly a, distinctly a failure, demonstrated failure, I think was his phrase, before the Foreign Relations Committee in a public hearing, I think this was very misleading.
Mr. Roberts.
Governor, you have taken yourself out of all the primaries this year. You have tried to discourage your backers. Nonetheless, draft Stevenson movement seem to be springing up anew all over the country. Ironically, right here in the District of Columbia, there's a primary on May 3rd. While the people here have no vote in November, they can vote in the primary. In this primary, Senators Humphrey and Morse are contesting, but there's also a slate pledged to you, despite your effort to discourage these people. Now, what do you want your supporters, your friends here to do? Do you want them to vote for Humphrey, for Morse, or do you want them to be un-American and stay at home?
You asked me a very difficult question, but I think I can... I'd planned to make a statement about this before I left Washington, perhaps tomorrow. Let me say, anticipate what I intend then to say better, I hope. I have done everything I could for the past year to discourage my friends from putting me or filing a slate of delegates pledged to me in the District of Columbia primary. It's happened in spite of my best efforts, although my name does not appear on the ballot, I'm told, because of a letter, an affidavit, or something that I filed here indicating that I didn't wish to be. Now, I must say that while I shall never forget the kindness and the support that I enjoyed at the hands of friends here in the District of Columbia in the primary of 1956, when I was seeking the nomination, that the situation is now different. I am not seeking the nomination. And therefore, I would have to say to my friends here in the district that I would ask them not to vote for me vote for the delegates pledged to me in this primary, but to vote for the delegates of their the delegates pledged to one of the other candidates of their choice. This is consistent with what I have done in Oregon and elsewhere.
Governor, in your own state of Illinois, a very large delegation has yet unpledged to anyone. Are you asking that that delegation not hold any votes for you on the first ballot?
Well, they've never asked me. There's no problem there about a primary. Our primary is over. We don't have a presidential preferential primary there in the sense of delegates being filed against their will.
So I don't have any votes there on the first ballot from
I don't know
state?
Really. I'm not even sure who the delegates are in Illinois. I suspect there will be some. I have no doubt there will be.
Mr. Steele.
How many? I don't know really.
Mr. Steele.
Governor, in the same address which Mr. Spivak just referred to, you said in a rather meaningful passage that periods of high purpose and endeavor yield to periods of complacency and relaxation. Long years of struggle over mountainous terrain are followed by years of slumbering in green valleys. Where are we now? Are we in the mountains or are we down in the valleys?
We're down in the valleys. We've been in the valley for some time. And I don't say this facetiously, Mr. Steele, as I'm sure you know. I've been deeply concerned with what I thought was a misdirection of the emphasis in American public life, what I have thought was a failure of the leadership to lift our sights to the real measure of the crisis of our times. I've said this in previous campaigns, and I've said it in many speeches.
Well, Governor, what are some of the issues that we should be facing up to from the mountains rather than being asleep in the valley?
I should think we would have to begin to face up to the fact that we have been living in a society which has been preoccupied with consumption, with more goods for more people, at the expense of our public services, that we must pay more attention to our education, we must spend more money on what, and pay more attention to what people need, as well as what they use, or what they eat, or what they wear, or what they ride in. I could mention all the obvious things that you, I'm sure, are familiar with. There is not only education, there's the rehabilitation of our cities, there's the improvement in our health services, and our natural resources, even water. Our water resources. Well, there are countless problems that I feel are being neglected in this country that we're going to have to pay more attention to. And this is what I mean on the domestic front. In the foreign front, I think we have been lulled into a sense of security to some extent by a lot of events that have taken place, which have been sometimes misconstrued to give us a false sense of security. That we haven't done what we can do or what we must do to strengthen the Atlantic community, to enlarge this circle in which we live, to organize economic aid to the underdeveloped countries on a much more effective, coordinated basis, to improve trade relations between the Atlantic community, the Western world, if I may put it that way, even our defense. I could go on, but I'm afraid I'd...
Well, Governor, there is one other issue. It's a rather dark and ominous one that seems to hang over the whole business of selecting a president this year. It's the issue of religion. Has this really got any place in the business of politics?
No. I suppose you would answer, someone ask, would ask me that question. I can only say about that, if I may... Take a moment that I personally am deeply distressed, Mr. Steele and gentlemen, that there has been so much talk about religion in this campaign, in this primary period. One stops to think it was 300 years ago that the issue of religious toleration was settled in Protestant Rhode Island and in Catholic Maryland. And here we are talking about it almost incessantly in this primary campaign. I think it's a pity that two such fine men as Senator Kennedy and Senator Humphrey, Senator Kennedy on the one hand, that he must defend himself for being a Catholic, and Senator Humphrey on the other hand, that he must defend himself from being charged with being the beneficiary of bigotry. And there's another point I'd like to make about this that I think perhaps we've sometimes overlooked in the discussion of the religious issue. That it isn't relevant. It isn't even relevant to any of the great issues of our time. I've told you, you know what they are better than I. The issues of peace. The issues of disarmament, of arresting the progression towards lethal destruction in the world, of the aid to the underdeveloped countries, of expanding our social services at home, of education, all of these things. There's not one of these issues which divides on the basis of religion. And of the greatest issue of all, which is the greatness and the security of the United States, Catholics and Protestants are as one on this issue. There is no division on this score. I could say one other word, and I thought about this on Easter Day, that instead of talking about religion in this campaign, it would be a mighty good thing if candidates and people alike were to recall a prayer which is common to both Catholics and Protestants so far as I know.
What is
that? You know the one I mean. That may the words of our mouths the meditations of our hearts. Be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord.
Well, Mr. Wilson.
I hope we don't have to discuss that anymore here today.
Mr. Wilson.
Governor Stevenson, do I understand that you believe that the President of the United States has misled and deceived the American people?
I think in many instances.
Would you cite two or three leading instances?
I remember very well when he said he thought that all was well in the Middle East when it was on the verge of blowing up in the 1956 campaign, when I myself evidently had better information, although I didn't have access to what he did. I remember a number of instances in which we have talked about liberation, I think, of the satellites, of the talked about rolling back communism, talked about liberating Chiang Kai-shek, talked about imaginative things that we were going to do in seizing the initiative in foreign policy, which we haven't done. One can, I'm afraid, multiply a good many of these. I think, and I don't charge the president or anyone else with a deliberate, mendacious misleading of the American people in the sense of trying to fool them for partisan gain. I think sometimes we proceed on the basis of confusion of what we consider political values and partisanship at the expense of truth. And this is what I deplore.
Yes, well, in this case, then, assuming that the president has misled us with respect to Berlin, what would be your policy with respect to the maintenance?
I didn't cite Berlin as an example. No. I don't believe he's been. I think he's misled us a little bit, if I may say so, on Latin America. At least I came back from there with nothing, I'm sorry to say, like his optimism.
But he has not misled us on Berlin.
Well, I don't know what you refer to. Maybe you could tell me.
Well, you know the policy perhaps better than I. But I wondered if you felt that the president insisting on standing firm in Berlin is in any way wrong, or should it be changed, or what constructive suggestion do you have to make with respect to the maintenance of our rights in Berlin?
Well, I think if you were to ask me what I thought would happen at the summit conference about Berlin, I would say that I think it's very likely that we will reach an interim agreement. It will be only an interim agreement as to Berlin. I don't believe that the Russians want to precipitate any final issue over Berlin. I think their position is not dissimilar from ours, that neither of us have anything to gain from making an issue over Berlin, which could result, from their point of view, in war, from our point of view, in imperiling our already exposed position 110 miles inside the communist lines in East Germany. So I suspect that what will come out of Berlin will be some, at the best, as a result of the summit meeting, might be some agreement on the limits of the Allied garrisons in Berlin, some limitation on the use of radio facilities for spreading propaganda in both East Berlin and West Berlin. I don't think much more than that is very likely to be accomplished, but yeah. I don't think that the president's views there are anything but a reflection of the previous meetings that have taken place, in that the foreign minister's level, which I understand is where we're going to proceed once we get to Berlin.
You have no suggestion.
When get to Geneva.
You have no suggestion to make with respect to the solution of this extremely difficult and critical problem.
No, there isn't any actual. There's no. It's clear that there's only one solution for Berlin, and that's to treat it as a whole, and that's that means the unification of Germany. Permanent division of this city is unnatural, just like permanent division of Germany is unnatural. The only solution of Berlin in the long run is the solution of Germany. But obviously the Russians aren't going to accept the unification of Germany on our terms, that is, a Germany allied to NATO, and we're not going to accept the unification of Germany on their terms, a Germany susceptible to the influences of the East. So there can't be any decision on Germany for the present. There are a lot of other things we can discuss, however, about Central Europe and about Eastern Europe.
Mr. Spivak?
Governor, did I understand you to say to Mr. Wilson that the president has misled us on South America? Now, you've just come back
from
South
America. I said that he had said when he came back that, my recollection isn't exact as to what he said, but that he expressed a high degree of optimism about conditions in Latin America and relations with this country. I said that, in my judgment, the conditions both in Latin America and with respect to the United States, I didn't share his optimism.
Well, you found a good deal of anti-Americanism there.
I found a great deal.
Yes. Now, what would you do if you were president to overcome that?
Well, I think you'd have to first determine what it is, what the source of it is, and the explanation for it, and whether it's anything that you can remedy. The source of much of the anti-Americanism springs from the conciliation of dictators. This is something we shouldn't do. We shouldn't have done, as was done in the Eisenhower administration. There are other things. Much of it is psychological. I think these people very naturally feel that they have been neglected in the post-war period, that we've been more preoccupied with other regions of the world, that we've given them short shrift, both in economic assistance and also in the psychological thing of attention, of full respect for their importance in the world and for their membership in this hemisphere in which we all live. Then finally, there's the problem of economic development, the aid and attention that we shall have to give them, and the concern that we shall have to show for the development of democratic institutions in these countries, which have fought their way out of dictatorship at great pain and sacrifice in many cases.
Now, Governor, when you returned from South America, you accused our leaders of talking of freedom and embracing dictators. Now, haven't we got quite a problem in South America? How do we deal with the dictatorships of the left and the right? Would you have us deal with Castro today the way you would have us deal with Trujillo? Would you have us deal with Khrushchev?
What do you mean by deal?
How are we going to handle
it? What I was referring to is the fact that we pinned the medal on Perón when, within a matter of months before he was driven out of the country by an outraged public. What I was referring to was the fact that we decorated Pérez Jiménez in Venezuela just before the revolution rose and extirpated him.
You think it's bad...
This is the kind of thing I'm talking about when I say dealing with them.
You think it's bad now, to welcome them? Even.
Oh, yes. Well, then we have to be very careful to preserve, to practice what we preach in Latin America.
Well, wouldn't you have had Khrushchev come over here?
Oh, surely. In fact, I urged him to come, as you know.
Yes, well, I say that...
But that has nothing to do with... has nothing to do with Latin America or with the conciliation of dictators.
No, what I'm getting at is this. Do we treat, there's been a feeling on the part of many liberals that we deal one way with the dictatorship of the left and one way with the dictatorship of the right, that we conciliate Castro, but that we play tough with Trujillo. Is that your position? Would you?
Well, I think we must be very careful to maintain a correct posture of diplomatic relations with countries that such as these, and at the same time not leave the impression that we are especially favorable, or that we applaud, or that we countenance the development of governmental institutions which are incompatible with our respect for democracy, especially when leaders of the democratic movements, we know very well, are deeply involved, often in exile, often making gallant struggles to reestablish democratic institutions in countries.
Mr.
It's a little hard to equate that to what seems to me a total irrelevancy, if I may say so, Mr. Spivak, such as Khrushchev coming to visit this country.
Governor,
Mr. Roberts,
I'd like to ask you about the nuclear test ban issue. You remember very well what happened when you raised this 4 years ago. The administration has gone in for a moratorium without inspection during these negotiations, as you once suggested it should do. Now it turns out that the scientists are saying that it's more difficult than ever to detect or set up a detection system. What I want to ask you is this. How would you balance this constant question of scientific risk, of cheating, with the political hopes of trying to break through the arms race and that you mentioned earlier?
Yes, it's not an easy question to answer. I proposed, as you know, 4 years ago, I think it was, that America give a lead to Russia and to the world in announcing our readiness to suspend the testing of the large H-bombs of that time, which were contaminating the atmosphere. Now, of course, 4 years later, we are doing just that. We have suspended testing unilaterally without any agreement, and they have suspended testing unilaterally without any agreement on our part. We've got to the point now where we're on the eve of making an agreement. This agreement relates to weapons of all sizes and to tests at all in all places, beneath the ground, on the surface of the ground, in the air, under the sea. Quite promising, I think. Quite hopeful. I'm rather, personally, I think if you were to ask me what I thought would happen, I'd say that there'd be a very good chance that we might reach an agreement in principle.
Governor, I think at that point I'm going to have to interrupt. I'm sorry, but I see that our time is up.
Mother's thanks to Adlai Stevenson, former governor of Illinois, and the members of the Meet the Press panel for a stimulating and enlightening half hour. Those panelists were Richard Wilson of Kohl's Publications, John Steele of Time Life Incorporated, Chama Roberts of the Washington Post, and the producer of Meet the Press, Lawrence Spivak. As usual at this point in our monitor hour, a personal word, if I may. One can be lonely in a crowd or in the midst of one's family. Many young girls and young women find a way to overcome tensions and loneliness by joining the YWCA. For more than 100 years, the Young Women's Christian Association has dedicated itself to the cause of womanhood, helping teenagers and young adults find happiness in leisure hours, in making friendships, and widening their outlooks by becoming part of an international movement that functions in 70 countries around the world. There are activities for all